a good 10 minutes on our YouTube page. Please subscribe. Here we go. You're getting ready. You're watching Cleveland come out. They're saying all the right things. They're being introduced. Moondoggy's going crazy. He's waving a flag. Each player has his own song inside of the intro song. I don't know if I ever noticed that before. So, like, they have their intro song as they're all being introduced. But then inside the intro song, you'll cut into each player having a specific song in of itself. It's another level. Dellavedova shows up, pulls a saber out of something like Sword and Stone. He's going nuts. Place is feeling it. And like a lot of the messaging was before was Kenny Atkinson. It was like, you know, look, we have a chance to do something special here. Yes, you do. You do have a chance to do something special here. Maybe they brought Dellavedova too because, you know, he's part of the 16 team that comes back from down 3-1. Cavs go up 5-0. And then they lose the first quarter, 38-26. They get down 50-26 in 15 minutes of game action. At the half, they had given up 26 points on the fast break. At the half, they were a minus 23 in fast break points. Whether it was Cat hitting threes early, all of his shots in the first half, Bridges, Cat, Brunson, Shamet, all in double figures. Assist, it felt like, on every field goal in that first quarter. Plus 9 in the boards at the half. Donovan Mitchell lobs that were working out. I started wondering, does Dellavedova have to stay when they're down 50-26? But Cleveland fought back a little bit, or fought off the tide of the Knicks. Got it to 19. Lisa Salters had some interesting quotes from Atkinson at the half, being like, hey, look, we got to stay positive. Do you? Has that worked? Has staying positive worked? He also liked that they kept their composure when they were down 29. It's like, did they keep their composure? The Knicks get bored. Be like, we kick your ass every night. You know, except for the comeback game, but still kind of kicked your ass 44-11 to close an NBA playoff game. I know what coaching is today, being positive when you don't want to be positive, saying, hey, this game is really hard, and these guys deal with all sorts of criticism and all this kind of stuff. Sometimes I think it's like, hey, why don't you try something else? Like, you guys really going to fucking go out like this? And the thing is this group is going to go out like this. This group, I think it is now established, even though I wasn't really quite there. You know, I think I was somebody who defended Donovan Mitchell. I certainly wasn't defending James, but, you know, going like, look, you can see the Allen Mobley matchup, like the good parts of it or whatever. But, you know, proof of concept, I think the proof is that whatever it is about this group, you know, I've thought about this more and more. I'm not finishing my thought with this, but I already have finished the thought, is that if there's just a way to understand personalities better, if there's a way to understand basketball players and what their skills are, but then also what their personalities are, what they are when it comes to adversity. And if you can figure out any of that stuff before the draft, really, because you already knew the answer to this stuff with Harden. Mitchell, there's some early wins against opponents where you didn't think necessarily that he was going to win, and then there's some losses there against opponents that you thought he'd be able to beat, or at least in this case in New York, compete with. So look, they're down 16. There's still like a weird window in this game. They're down 16. Harden, just a terrible turnover, leads to a Bridges three. They call a timeout. They're like, all right, look, like, this isn't over yet. The first play they run, they don't even run the play. Harden turns it over. So it's Harden turnover, Bridges three, timeout. After, you know, again, it was 29. They got this to 16. I think they got it to 16 with a little shot variance and also just general boredom, malaise. So New York just finished off the East winning 11 straight. They were 12-2 in the playoffs. Their offensive rating is number one of any of the playoff teams by almost 4 points over OKC. Their defensive rating is actually better than San Antonio, so that's number one. Their net rating now is plus 20. They're almost double what San Antonio's net rating is the second best one in the NBA playoffs. They're number one in rebounding rate. They're the number one shooting team. The lineup that has played the most minutes of any team in the playoffs is the New York lineup with OG, which was the second most played lineup in the regular season behind Minnesota's lineup that played like 700 minutes. You know the one. They didn't see it in the playoffs. But it was always very strange to me that with 541 minutes played of this group that we all like, you're like, how is it only a plus two? How is it a plus two over 541 regular season minutes? How is that even possible? Brooklyn's lineup with Michael Porter Jr., Terrence Mann, Claxton Clowney, and Yeoman in 307 minutes is like a plus three. So how is it that that Brooklyn group has a better net rating than this Knicks group? So it was something in the Atlanta series that I'd brought up. I'm like, well, this is sort of strange that Atlanta with CJ has this five that has been crushing opponents as long as they get Risacher out of there. But the bench is a disaster, and so that Knicks series might be based on the bench. The Knicks, whether it's the OG stretch where he looked like one of the five best players in the league during the playoffs, which we know isn't true, the Bridges stretch where he was, what, like 70 of 100 until some misses last night, Brunson, who can drop 20 on you in a half, really like 17 and a quarter, or he can play make the way he did with a career high in assists going back to game two. And then Cat, who still, I think there's more shots for him, but hasn't had to because he's been kind of this central hub. And then Shamet comes in when Hart's on the bench, and then Hart's next game, he's the star, and they don't go back to Shamet. And the Mitchell Robinson part hasn't really like been fully formed because of the free throw part of it, but yet somebody you'd expect is going to have a game where, you know, he's a problem. He's a lot to deal with because of his offensive rebounding, and I just think in moments that I've seen from him, there's a lot to like. Miles McBride, right? So, like, that's kind of the eight here. But what I can't seem to do, which what everybody wants me to do here, is go, like, they're one of the all-time greats. They're one of the great ones. I think they are easily the class of the East. That's not a debate. That's not why you're here. But I also think this East was a fucking mess. It's even worse than I thought it would be. Like, where do you start? Everybody likes Boston once they got Tatum back. And then you realize, like, Mazzulla is not going to make an adjustment until 48 hours after the adjustment needs to be made. And then Tatum misses game seven. And Jaylen Brown was on, like, the war path to somehow fight against this victimhood of, like, I don't know what the hell was going on with him. Philly beats them, but then you realize, like, Philly is as screwed up as anybody because Embiid certain nights shouldn't be out there, but he's going to be out there because he wants to get back. And in a way, he feels somewhat redeemed. I think he said it was like his favorite season because he got through the Celtics and won a game seven. The standard is so low for his playoff success that it was like, look what I did. Like, okay. Detroit, the one seed, almost loses to Orlando. Orlando, who almost looked like they shouldn't even be playing this year after their loss to Philadelphia, then somehow turns around, blows out Charlotte, goes up 3-1 on Detroit, then blows a game where they score, what, 16 points in the second half of a playoff game? And Detroit almost lost to that team and probably would have if Franz doesn't get hurt. So then you have Cleveland taking out Toronto. Toronto fans who treat a five seed like another banner. That takes seven games. Cleveland against Detroit takes seven games. New York runs through Philly, runs through Cleveland. Cleveland's playoff record making the Eastern Conference Finals is 8-10. Do you know how weird that is? They're below 500. So you also have the, like, hey, Donovan Mitchell can say he made it out of the second round. It's like, yeah, he can. And in a couple of years, we'll forget how bad this collectively was. But I just can't be like a simpleton about this. You know, if you look at some of the lineup stuff, the most played lineup is that OG lineup with the Knicks, and it's like a plus nine, which is a huge improvement of where it was in the regular season. You know who's like a plus, also a plus nine? It was Cleveland's four with Dean Wade. San Antonio has some Wemby lineups that are like plus 30. There's three OKC lineups that are overwhelming, yet ironically, their number one played lineup in the playoffs is a net negative, which is the two bigs, Dort, SGA, with AJ Mitchell. So I think there's a way of going like, yeah, man, I'm really impressed with New York. There's all sorts of things I like about it. I love their five. I like their six. But I think I've always liked their five and then gone like, is it not really as good? Like, shouldn't, if this five are really that nasty, which it kind of feels like right now because of what they put together here over a month plus, it's like, wouldn't that have been like a one seed in the East? So what the hell happened there? I think all these teams around them sucked. So yeah, congrats in the Eastern Conference. But I'm not going to be a simpleton about this and then go start comparing to Moses Malone going fo. I'm not doing that. Cleveland. Man. I want to get back to like the personality of teams and trying to figure this stuff out, you know, which will be a forever task for all of us that like care about the NBA. And you're like, oh, I wonder if this guy's going to be any good. I wonder if this team is going to be any good. But I wonder if we're entering this or have been in this era now, maybe for a bunch of years, but maybe my awareness of it is cranking up or I'm just getting frustrated. It's just maybe there's just bad personality bets. Maybe they're just players. It's like they don't really quite have that thing. You know, I saw that Jeff Teague clip where he was like, after year three, he was like, yeah. He was like, I don't really care if we win or not. You know, the first 3 years, he's like, I want to do everything right. I want to get better and better and better. But it was like just the dudes around me, they didn't care. Year 12 guy, like, what the hell? I was supposed to care? And it actually bummed me out a little bit. Not that I didn't realize that this is very true with a lot of players in this league. It's an awesome lifestyle. You keep making that money, you know, whatever. But I wonder what the real number of, like the real percentage of players is that don't care if they don't win. And if you sign one of those guys up to be your number one, you are fucked. And the thing is like, do you know, and you're still doing it? Because with Mitchell, I would say this is the first time, like going into next year, moving forward, if I do my annual adjusted legacies or adjusted ceilings or, you know, audits of these players and where they're at, like, even though Mitchell makes it further than he's ever made it, and he got off to an awesome start yesterday too, like you could see some real intention from him. This would probably be like the first season going into next year where I'm like, yeah, there's a bunch of these guys and I'm not going to put Mitchell over anymore. Or I'm not going to debate that he's at the same level. I don't know. Maybe that's a little fair. Maybe it's unfair. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that one yet. But with Harden, if you're Colby Altman and you're a really good GM and you know what his deal is, you've seen these flameouts time and time again, and you're like, yeah, I want that. How do you do that? Like, you don't like Garland. Okay, fine. Small, undersized, reliability defensively. Hasn't stayed healthy. Mitchell is too off the ball. I don't think that got solved. But let's bring in Harden, who just is not comfortable out there. I mean, if it weren't the officials embarrassing themselves, giving him an absurd free throw rate through these playoffs too, because his advanced stuff, however bad you thought it had been with other things, it was off a cliff this year for him on the efficiency because of the turnovers, because of the terrible shooting numbers. But he salvaged some traditional box score numbers where it didn't look as bad because, you know, it felt like every other game, whatever officiating crew had, it was like, I don't know if they felt bad for James or what. It was a fucking joke. And they're giving him these calls. So instead of like the 4-point game, he has like a 12 or 14 point game where it makes it look like he did something. Those two turnovers last night, just the epitome of like, hey, this is a big, big spot. Like, we're kind of getting our asses kicked. Huge spot here. Can you take care of the ball in this possession? No, I can't. and it'll lead to a three, and we're going to call a timeout. We're going to say the right things. We're going to have a huddle. We're going to say all sorts of good things, and we're going to get out there, and I'm going to give the ball away immediately. I'm going to give the ball away so quick after this timeout. We all say the right things and look at each other and nod. The camera isn't going to even catch the turnover. That's how quick I'm giving this ball up this time. And so Cleveland has to sign on for two more years of this, because that's how they supposedly got him the first time around. I mean, you want to think of the irony of ironies. It's like, I believe Harden in the Daryl Morey thing. I always have. And I think Daryl saw how bad it was with Harden, despite being his number one fan for as long as he was. He saw how bad it was and then went, I actually cannot do this. I can't do this. So if you've agreed in principle to something with Harden to get that deal done last February, like, how do you feel about, like, yeah, we'll give you 2 for $70? Because that means you are now putting Donovan Mitchell, if you can re-sign him, who apparently wanted this, which is like, you don't have league pass, man. I mean, Basketball Reference, you sort playoff regular season, that shit's free. You don't even need an account for it. Like, Donovan, somebody's got it. Sam Merrill must have an account. To want this, to go, yeah. Because, like, look, you could bring everybody back next year, get Mitchell signed, feel good, because it's better than, like, hey, we could still win, like, 58 games. It's a hell of a lot better. It's a more fun season than what a lot of these teams are doing. So I wouldn't blame a front office and ownership for doing it. But then it's like, yeah, then what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen later? Well, this is going to happen again. And so do you do that to Mitchell, even though he wanted Harden to be his teammate? Do you sign on for three more years of this? You know, you'd say, oh, we'll trade him. I'm like, all right, for what? Yeah, it just blows my mind. It blows my mind that you can see a guy do the same thing over and over and over again. And then you're like, yeah, but look at all those stats from 2015 to 19. And every single announcing crew takes it easy on every single one, which I get. I understand, you know, partnership, NBA, the whole thing. You have to be positive about the product. But there's some times you just can be like, hey, man, this isn't new. And is Cleveland actually going to do this? And everybody kind of thinks, yeah, they probably are. All right, let's bring in Cerruti, some mailbag stuff here.
Well, let me just say this. That one guy, was it the Mavericks play-by-play guy? He did not take it easy on Harden a couple years ago. Remember that rant?
Yeah, they pulled it too.
Hate to see that. But you don't see that very often. I want to ask you this question. Do you think, we'll get to the mailbag in a second. Do you think the Cavs would have been better off just losing Game 7 to the Pistons?
No.
Because I actually do.
You
I think
do?
There's a lot
make,
of reasons
all right,
why.
Make the case.
This series was catastrophic to them. Whereas if they lost in Game 7 to the Pistons, you can go, all right, you know, all right, Donovan doesn't make the conference finals again, yada, yada. But, like, I don't know. Are people that mad about that? You can say, hey, Harden, give him a full season. You know, it could be okay. But, like, between the Kenny Atkinson analytics thing, just, like, Harden looking completely dead, Mitchell kind of in and out weirdly, and then obviously you've been asking to whether or not you got to trade these two bigs forever. This feels like the lowest possible point I could really ever remember for a team that made the conference finals. So I'm not saying, like, the team would be any better going forward, but at least, like, the noise around them would be quieter. Like, people wouldn't be quite as, like, disgusted with them as we are now. And for the Donovan Mitchell conference final thing, sure, you got there, but you still have zero wins in the conference finals. So now all those people are going to hang that over your head too. So I actually think if they just, like, kind of more quietly went out in Game 7 than had this huge epic burnout in the conference finals against the Knicks, I think it's actually easier for them.
Yeah, especially if, like, Detroit was able to somehow get a couple from New York. I just don't know if that would have happened, you know, with the way New York is playing right now. But again, the regular season, it looked like from that was, I mean, Cleveland was a preferable opponent. Just because of what we saw the regular season, you know, I don't know if it would have meant anything or whatever. I get your point. Like, it's like raising the stakes and that flame out when the stakes are higher is more damning. Like, there's so many teams and quarterbacks that lose in a conference championship game and nobody cares years later. And then it's like, yeah, but when you lose in the Super Bowl, it just sort of hangs over you forever. So I get your overall point. But if you're Mitchell and you've never made it, and the people that hate, like, they can't say it anymore. It's kind of like the Embiid thing.
But I think it's worse. He made it and he still has the same amount of wins. Like, and it was epically bad.
But he had never made it past the second round. And, you know, he's kind of in that, like, 11, 12, 13.
They also have the worst record you could possibly have for any team that made the conference finals. Did you see that stat? Like, it's not like crazy. Like, what they were 8-10, which is literally the worst record you could have as a conference finals team. Because they went 7-7 and got swept.
Yeah.
It's not a good team.
Well, that's my whole Knicks thing, which, you know, there are a million emails this morning. Because they, Knicks fans, again, the Knicks fans that are even taking the time to do this, there's plenty of Knicks fans that I'm sure agree with me. But Knicks fans that are like, well, look at what they just did. This is like great. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess they'll take out whoever between San Antonio and OKC in five games then. And I know that's not really what they're saying, but it's like if they get one of those teams in seven games, then it's like, you know. But
well,
where were you for six? If you were this nasty, like, what took so long?
I do think it's being a little disrespectful to the Knicks because they are playing out of their minds right now, and I think like you can only obviously play who's in front of you, and I think it's a cop-out answer, but it's both. The Knicks are really good and the East really sucks. How many West teams do you think would have won the East?
Well, I don't know. So I think Minnesota was...
Yeah, Minnesota, Denver, probably right.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota's really jammed up, though, so it wasn't like the fully formed version of Minnesota. So would that team beat the Knicks? You know, I'm not sure of that. And then Denver... You know, what a mess from them.
Just I wouldn't confidently say either of them. I think it's just two. So it's a fun question, but I actually think the answer is just two. All right, mailbag. We got a couple good ones here, all Cavs related, but I'll start with this one because it dovetails nicely. This is from Chad, subject Cavs. He said, well, should the Cavs blow it up? The Harden experiment didn't work. Donovan Mitchell is good, but he's best at being a third option on a championship caliber team. Build around Mobley, ? Maybe Allen and Mobley front court, since Mobley doesn't seem to be a full-time five. It's really tough. The West seems to have the Spurs and Thunder as contenders for at least half a decade, and the East has the Celtics reloading, and the Knicks are looking pretty solid, too. What trade partners and packages can the Cavs hope to achieve? Chad.
Yeah, you know, look, I think it's the same Mobley conversation that we've always had now once it became clear, like, he just wasn't going to get that much better. You know, I think he's a guy that you're not really scared of offensively. You know, he can have his 20-point games. He can have his really nice drives where he dunks over somebody. He can hit a couple threes. But I don't think you ever think it's going to keep happening enough for you to actually be scared by the whole thing. But then it's like, so what do you do? Do you pivot to some sort of Giannis trade and then just like go for it if Harden's staying? But then it's like, God, imagine Giannis waiting around for the fucking ball from Harden. Then what the hell is Mitchell going to do? Mitchell's going to be the healthiest he's ever been because he doesn't have to do anything. I don't know that I would even agree that Mitchell is like at best a third best option on a really good team, because I don't think those teams, it's going to be really hard to build those teams anymore. You know, it's not really going to be the case. Like, if Mitchell were in SGA shoes with like a fully healthy Thunder, Mitchell would be the number one scoring option on the team and they'd probably be a really good team. But yeah, I don't feel like defending Mitchell right now. So it'll probably be like get rid of Allen and then keep the other guys and then add some other sort of wing, lesser backup center. It'll probably be the simplest, safest, as opposed to the biggest swings. Unless there's some way that they can figure out a way to do Harden's deal, or it's like, is there somewhere you want to go where we still salvage whatever contract it is you think that you're going to get? Because Harden's also had this strange dance numerous times of like trying to make up the money that he's lost in the past. And it's actually worked out a little bit better for him, even though he's not going to recoup like the stuff he turned down in Houston or Brooklyn. But I've already told that story before.
All right, one more. This is funny. This is from Shane. He wants to know, if this NBA playoffs was a Famous Ryan travel vlog, which team would be the mayonnaise dress salad coated in disappointment?
Yeah, that was awful. That was in Iceland, Western Fjords. And the place was nice enough to even make me something because it was sort of closed, because I think it was like 12 or 1 in the morning, but it was just bright daylight. And it was just the strangest thing because you're like in a convenience store and there's families out there with their kids in the swing and you're just like, so you're open? It's like, not really. Some of the guys are milling around having beers. And then I was like, I just would chicken, carrots, lettuce, the whole thing. If you have vinegar, great. He was like, I got you. And he was like, this, you know, this guy's in the middle of nowhere. He hooked me up and then it comes out. It's just mayo. Just piping mayo all over it. Because I could see he had the big pouch of mayo and he squeezes at the end. And they love to do like the little. And I was like, fuck, I have to eat this too. Because he just made it. I was like scooping the mayo off to the side. The thing was, I didn't want to be there anymore. And I really think whether it's Detroit's offense, but it has to be Cleveland. Because even last night, it was actually kind of fun. I was like, yeah, this team has, like, they're not going to fight back. And I knew I'd never have to have that salad again. So maybe that was it. I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to eat any more of the salad. That's kind of how it felt with Cleveland. But at the same time, I knew it would be over soon.
Because they're not the most disappointing team. I think that's probably Denver, but that's, I guess, not what the salad was about. The salad was...
Yeah, the salad was its own experience. That was just extremely disappointing. But I was like, hey, just get through it. Pick at the chicken. Eat the vegetables. And just keep pounding water to get this mayo funk. Just warm, room temperature mayo. All over the top of a fucking salad, which, you know, that does not qualify as a salad. All right, that'll do it for us. NBA mailbag, NBA mailbag RR@gmail.com. I think our regular scheduled pod situation will be Wednesday, Friday this week. So look out. Let me get the sticks out on a Thursday because the Knicks have taken care of business and we don't have many of these games to go before we head to the NBA Finals. So we'll be all over OKC and San Antonio to close that one out west. Thanks to everyone on the show today. Ryan Russillo, podcast, Barstool Sports, and our YouTube page.